Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. This episode is made possible by our sponsors, the CSU Ram Zone, powered by the CSU Bookstore, a great sponsor of our Pick'em and Bracket contests all year, Ginger and Baker, our favorite restaurant on the planet, and of course, Peterson Toyota, our title sponsor of the podcast. When you're looking for a new vehicle, discover the convenience of Toyota SmartPath. This experience makes it easier for you to find the ideal vehicle tailored to your preferences, while a convenient payment estimator makes it easier than ever to find loan terms that suit you. Plus, get an instant valuation of your trade-in vehicle. Visit PetersonToyota.com today to start exploring. Peterson Toyota has a huge selection of new cars as well as pre-owned vehicles. Whatever you're looking for, Peterson Toyota has something for you at competitive pricing and financing. And for the remainder of the month, you can buy three tires and snag the fourth for just $1. But hurry, that offer ends April 30th. If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle or simply looking for new tires, please give Peterson Toyota a first shot at your business. Thanks. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Ram Nation Radio. I'm Joel Cantalamessa here with Mike Rowe. We are going to have Kevin Lytle, the Fort Collins, Colorado, and CSU beat reporter, join us in a second. It has been a few weeks since we have recorded. Just time getting away from us. Had a couple trips, Mike and I both out of town, so had a little bit of downtime, but trying to get back on the horse here. We got a spring football game Saturday, wrapping up 15 practices. We had some basketball news with Nico Medved getting a new contract, Nick Clifford declaring for the draft, and all sorts of other stuff, and we are going to talk to Kevin Lytle about it. All right, happy to bring in our buddy, Kevin Lytle from the Fort Collins, Colorado. And it's been a while, Kev, and I feel as out of touch with CSU athletics right now as I ever have been. I don't know why. I just kind of checked out after our disappointing loss in Charlotte. And the only real catching up I've done is through your work and Justin Michael's work. So looking forward to talking with you today about what's going on in Ramland. Mike Rowe is with us as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Kevin, I guess, first of all, there's a lot of things we want to talk to you about, and I know you've made the circuit and answered a lot of this in other places already, but just, I guess, what...
Hey, time out for a second. Kevin, happy birthday.
Hey.
It's your birthday today?
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it, man. Yeah.
What better way to spend it than with the... Joel?
What are you
Ram
doing,
Nation boys?
What are you doing a podcast with us on your birthday? This is the last thing you should be doing.
Nah. That what better place to be than with my Ram Nation friends? Hey, it's a work day, so I'm just working.
And I love CSU day is an I love Kevin Lytle day.
Yeah, I like that. Let's get that one going. But no, appreciate that, fellas.
Well, give us some of the top highlights that you've seen from spring ball so far. We'll start with football. And I guess what are some highlights and some of the surprises you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the first things that I've kind of been thinking is it's, I don't want to say less interesting. That's probably the wrong phrase, but everything is more set than, you know, the previous couple springs under Jay Norvell, which is how it should be. You know, year three spring ball should be, you know, a lot of the stuff set, you should have a lot of starters set, and that's the case. So, you know, year one, obviously, was a whole lot of like, oh my gosh, you know, new system, what's this going to look like? Year two was still a bit of that. But things are, you know, kind of, I don't want to say stabilized, because nothing's fully stable in college sports these days. But, you know, it you kind of just know what the systems are and, you know, what's working. And now it's, you know, building out depth, building, you know, taking some of those starters and trying to get them better and things like that. So, I mean, it's kind of a boring answer, but knowing a lot of what is expected is kind of one of the themes of this camp. I mean, we know BFN is the quarterback. We know a lot of the starters, even with some of the graduations. So it's been some of that. And then, you know, again, year three, you should have young guys that you've recruited starting to step into some roles. And we're definitely seeing that. So like Boom Jock, for instance, we saw him play a decent bit last year, but now he is, you know, the starter, you know, Mike linebacker, is going to be on the field a ton, really looks the part. He's doing a lot of, I think, exciting things. You know, in the secondary, there's been some injuries and stuff. So you have some young guys really getting a lot of reps there. It's like a Dylan Phelps has, you know, started jumping off the page. And then obviously receiver, for a lot of reasons, we know that, you know, those young guys are coming through. And, you know, Caleb Goody's had a great camp. Jamari Persons looked good at times. Dylan Goffney, not one of the young guys, but a guy that seemingly seems to be ready to step into a bigger role. Donovan Ollie, new addition there, has jumped out. So it's kind of a mix. Like I say, a lot of those, you know, stable, you know, starters for a while are kind of in their spots and doing what, you know, you expect. And then you're seeing that next wave of youngsters, O-line. There are several young guys that this staff has brought in that you're going to see on the O-line as well. So I think that's one of the things is, you know, they've on paper been signing good recruiting classes, and now's kind of the time for, you know, some more of those players to step into those roles.
How has Braden Fowler-Nicolosi looked now that he's kind of the cemented starter? Have you noticed the difference in the way he's carrying himself and the way that he's looking in workouts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it seems like, you know, I know Norvell has said this, that Braden Fowler-Nicolosi has, you know, taken on the role of being a quarterback, you know, beyond just the X's and O's of it, throwing the ball a bit of, you know, quarterback, it's kind of non-negotiable, does have to be a team leader type of person. And, you know, I think we saw last year some that the team seems to rally around him pretty well. And Norvell was saying he seems to be embracing, you know, being, you know, kind of a locker room quarterback, if you want to use that kind of silly pun. So it seems like he's pretty comfortable in the role he's getting. You know, it's, we'll see in the fall how it pays off, but man, he's getting a lot of reps that are reps he wasn't getting a year ago. You know, in spring last year, he was number three. So big difference there. You know, he has a live electric arm. You know, obviously I'm not a quarterback coach. There are still times you wonder if he, you know, should set those feet a little bit better, but then he'll make other throws. That's like, wow, that's just natural. Like you can't teach some of that. So it's a big year for him. Obviously he's going to make big plays, but he also needs to make smarter plays at times too. So yeah, I think it's been a successful spring. We'll see how successful, you know, come fall, but he seems to be a comfortable, confident guy right now.
Anything that we should be looking for in the spring game, or anything you're particularly looking forward to in this final workout of the spring this Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think I've said this before. I like the format, the ones versus the world. I think it's kind of an entertaining way to do it. Yeah, they're a little dinged up, so we'll see how much the ones versus world, you know, works, or if they have to do a little roster shuffling here and there. But I want to see, you know, I kind of mentioned the cornerbacks. You've had some injuries like Isaiah Asisima, Elias Larry, Dom Jones have all, I think, missed a little bit of time. And those, you know, are potentially your top three guys. So I'd like, you know, I don't know if they'll be out there or not, but it'd be interesting to see how they can do, like, say, some of the other young guys, like a Dylan Phelps, see if he can really take time there in the secondary. The running game is going to be fascinating, you know, to see how that rotation works. If all the guys are out there, and we just saw Van Shield has entered the portal, so he's obviously gone. Justin Marshall has missed a little bit of time in camp, so we'll see if he's available there. But I mean, you have obviously Marshall, Kobe Johnson, Damian Henderson. He's been getting a lot of reps, Avery Morrow, obviously. So kind of how they rotate through that, which again, I don't think that's going to be a be all end all set in stone heading into the fall, but it'll be interesting to see how they use that.
What do you think the two deep is in the running back department?
If everyone's healthy and available, I'd say Marshall, then Kobe probably. But some of it will be situation dependent. I mean, you know, like a Avery and Damian are probably pretty good short yardage backs, you know, where you, if you need three, you're going to make sure you get three with them. But I think we'll see all of them. Kobe's going to return kicks again. Like, obviously, was at Washington State where he ran one back last year. So you have a, I like the mix of they all have something they do a little different than another guy. So that's why I think that group can work together, even though there's a lot of them.
Who of that group will be least happy with their playing time this fall?
Well, I wonder Kobe, just, you know, you look at the guy's resume, he had, you know, 2,500 yards at North Dakota State. He would have been, you know, probably pretty easily or firmly the starter last year until injuries started hitting him. And now even if he gets decent playing time, it's probably going to be more portioned out than it would have been a year ago. So you kind of wonder how that will be, but you know, he obviously knows that, and, you know, right now he's here and on board. So, but just a veteran guy like that playing his last year, you wonder if he's like, oh man, this isn't the amount of reps I was hoping for.
Now, we all know that Clay's moved on. Jack Stratton's moved on. As you've already gone over, this really is Braden's program. Who's number two?
Yeah, Jackson Brousseau's, I think, pretty firmly number two. Every time they're doing team stuff, it goes BFN, Jackson, and then Giles Pooler. They're really the only three quarterbacks in camp right now. I think that'll be the case. They really like Jackson Brousseau. He throws a nice ball. I'm excited to see him Saturday as well. But yeah, you know, at one point I had wondered if there'd be some, you know, split reps, but it's been all BFN one, Jackson two. You know, come fall, it'll be interesting. You know, you usually want, you know, travel with your third quarterback and all that. You know, will that be Giles Pooler, or, you know, maybe the youngster and Darius Curry who will come this summer? I would think Pooler, because I think as a third, you kind of want a veteran, almost coach sitting there. But that'll be kind of an interesting, you know, down the depth chart or down the road thing to watch. But yeah, I expect Brousseau will get all the number twos.
What can you tell us about Justice Ross Simmons' departure? I mean, it sounds like from Jay Norvell's quote, he said that he was not going to be a part of the team anymore. Our captains talked about it today. So it almost seems like this was the team saying, look, we've had enough of something. I interpreted it almost as if they had enough of him maybe not showing up for workouts or meetings or something, and ultimately they just parted ways. Is that what you read on it?
Yeah. So that's a tough situation. So what we know is, Justice wasn't going to be practicing in spring because he had shoulder surgery, so he wasn't going to be on the field. Obviously, you still have team commitments and whatnot. He was there that Thursday in practice, actually in uniform. And then Saturday, Norvell told us he's not on the team anymore. And he said, you know, the captain's talk. So there's at least an element. I'm not sure, you know, it's like a vote or anything like that, but certainly an element of team input. You know, Justice is a guy that, you know, in December, you know, we kind of know he had, you know, the tampering was going on, not with just him, but everyone. Norvell kind of talked about that. And then, you know, when Justice and BFN, you know, tweet out basically recommitment graphics, you don't have to share recommitment if no one's, you know, right, trying to lure you away. So obviously that had happened. That doesn't stop. Schools are still reaching out to not just him, but others. You know, I'm hearing some pretty wild stories of tampering going on here and elsewhere. So yeah, it seems like a situation, you know, I sympathize on a lot of different levels. So, you know, for Justice, you know, he's close with Lewis Brown. He's close with Marshawn Oxley, who are both, you know, off the team now and off to different places. So, you know, being a young guy and a couple of your friends leave, you can sympathize there. The tampering and stuff, I can understand how confusing that could be of trying to see what is and isn't real. From the team side, you know, if there are reliability concerns and things like that, you don't want a guy, you know, one foot in, one foot out, and moving on, you know, in a way makes sense there too. So I kind of sympathize on all sides. You know, I know Justice, it's been reported he has a visit to Syracuse this week, which was lined up pretty quickly, which, you know, probably tells you a little something. But it's just a tough situation that in a lot of ways, I think, symbolizes where we're at with college athletics right now.
It was interesting because I saw his mom had tweeted that It's not NIL. It's all about the NFL. So if that's the case, if he's looking to improve his NFL draft stock down the road, I mean, seems like staying at CSU is the right place. I mean, they
yeah,
in the NFL. So
yeah, and that, you know, and that's where it's tough. Like, obviously, for, you know, from her side, obviously she's looking out for her kid and wanting to protect him, which I can fully understand, appreciate. But obviously, like you say, CSU and this staff, you know, I'm not saying it's a perfect program or anything, but they have a pretty good history of sending guys to the NFL. Obviously, Justice was playing alongside a receiver who could be in the NFL, you know, right now, and a year from now will be heading into the NFL. So obviously, I think it's probably fair to say it's too simplistic to say it's about NFL draft stock.
With him gone, who gets more balls this year? Football.
Yeah.
Like,
yep. So, you know, obviously Horton's still going to be number one. Goffney, like I say, has had a really big spring, and he's going to have to be more consistent. You know, he had high points last year, but then he'd have games where you didn't see much out of him. Donovan Ollie, really big guy. They'll use him in spots. And then you need one of those youngsters, you know, whether it's Goody or Person or, you know, a Jordan Ross coming in. You know, there are others. I'm not even naming. There's obviously a big group there. You're going to need some youngsters to step up. But again, like, I'm not saying that the loss of Justice Ross Simmons isn't important, because obviously he's a very talented player. But if there's any position that I trust that this staff is finding guys and developing guys, it's probably in that receiver room. So there's a big group there battling for it. And it's going to be pretty interesting to see who does step forward. You know, it's easy to get fooled sometimes, you know, a spring star that, you know, never materializes in fall. So we'll see how, you know, the guys who have had big springs go, but someone in there is going to have a big chance to emerge.
Have you seen Silas Evans at all? I mean, it's he's
yeah,
a guy we're all excited when he picked CSU over CU, and he had what, Oregon State, and just haven't heard his name a whole lot.
Yeah, he's still in that group, and he's definitely out there practicing and everything. Yeah, he has the physical tools. I'll be interested to see, you know, Saturday where he kind of fits in that mix and rotation, and if he's fighting his way in. It's like I say, it's kind of just a big group that you really have to. You have to stand out to emerge, you know, just kind of being there and doing, you know, doing the average thing isn't going to be enough to get you time.
The other news this week was tight end transfer Jackson Warren from Navarro JC in Texas. I know you got to try to replace Dallin Holker somehow. He's declared for the draft. Is Jackson Warren a guy that can help do that? Or how do you view the tight end position in general with, you got returners, Jordan Williams, Vince Brown, Peter Montini, Mason Muau. And then we got one player coming in from the recruiting class this year as well. So what do you see out of the tight end room?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. If you guys remember a year ago, the running back room in spring ball was decimated due to injuries. There are kind of no running backs in practices. It's basically Van Shield and no one else. This year, that's kind of what the tight end room is. Vince Brown's been in camp. He's been pretty consistently there, but Jordan Williams and Mason Muau have both missed time for various things. Montini, I mean, he's sort of a tight end, but he's more like fullback, H-back, you know, tool guy that does everything. He's not really going to be a pass catcher. But yeah, Jackson Warren, they're really excited about him. He had some big schools after him. I believe some big schools are still after him. And he's a, if you've seen like the Twitter highlights, him, you know, going through the legs, windmill dunking, he's obviously like a big time athlete. And from, you know, what I've been told, he's, you know, versatile in what he can do on the field. I had someone say that he's kind of in the mold of Cole Turner, who obviously was very successful for the staff at Nevada. So I expect, you know, I'll be doing a little two deep depth chart after the spring game. I'm going to have him at top at tight end, even though he's not on campus yet. They're nice. Pretty excited about him. Now, is he going to be Dallin Holker? That would be quite a big ask for a kid coming in his first year from a JUCO, but they're pretty excited about him. And he's a young guy. He has, what, 3 years to play. So, you know, in theory, if you can, you know, grow and develop him, it could be a long time answer at tight end.
Well, anything else that we're kind of missing from the football side of things that's top of your mind?
No, I think those are main things. You know, it's, coaches love the phrase complimentary football, and, you know, this team didn't have it last year. You know, the offense would have its big moments, and it seemed like those paired with the defense struggling. And then when the defense would be playing well, it seemed like the offense would hit a lull. Like they just never seemed to, or not consistently, put both sides together. I think they're in a lot of ways conscious of trying to fix that. You know, Norvell's talked about controlling games a little bit more, which, you know, I don't think necessarily means, you know, just a ground and pound offense, but, you know, being smart about when you're attacking, how you're attacking, how you're, you know, using the balance that you can have is going to be a thing going into to next season. Cause they have to, you know, they were in pretty much every game last year. You just have to figure out how to flip those, you know, kind of small margins so that you're on the winning side of more of those. So again, that's not an answer we'll have on how they're doing that, you know, or how successfully they're doing it in spring, but kind of something to watch moving into the fall, because in some of these scrimmages, the offense has had some more sustained drives rather than, you know, just the big hitter drives, which is probably a good thing to see, and a more sustainable type of offense. Because, you know, again, last year it would either be a big play or be a three and out. It felt like, you know, it can be a successful drive to get two first downs and punt. Honestly, I think they need some more of that, of, you know, not always real high or real low.
All right, let me pause real quick and tell you about Ginger and Baker. Have a classy meal out on the town at Ginger and Baker's Cash Restaurant, featuring steaks, chops, fine wine, and good whiskey. And on Thursdays, enjoy a bottle of wine from the Cash's award-winning wine list for just half price. The Cash dining room is gorgeous. It's a warm and inviting space filled with Rocky Mountain art, wood, leather, and stone. You can choose a table or take a seat at the marble-topped bar, enjoy the sparkling lights of Old Town, or try the Cash patio with huge glass walls and ceilings, offering a bird's-eye view of Colorado skies and Foco's River District. And don't forget about the great comfort food classics at the Cafe Restaurant, which has some of my most favorite food options. And as you know, Ginger and Baker also features a coffee shop, a market, event spaces such as the Milltop and Wine Cellar, as well as a teaching kitchen. And speaking of the teaching kitchen, they've just added all of their May cooking classes to the calendar. So in the coming weeks, you can catch such classes as cooking the perfect steak, pasta from scratch, breakfast for dinner, Mother's Day pie, family class, backyard barbecue, and many, many more. This place is so awesome, guys. Support our friend Ginger Graham and treat yourself to a world-class experience at our favorite place, Ginger and Baker. Well, let's switch over to hoops. I know that you've talked about the Nico Medved extension on your worldwide radio and podcast circuit in the last week, but got a few questions for you on that. First of all, Amy Parsons has got to be the kind of the leading the charge on that. Everything I've heard is that she is way behind Nico Medved and wanted him here. And I would assume that she kind of had her directive for John Weber to get this done.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair analysis of it. I sat down with both Amy and John together in Charlotte for an interview. And obviously at that time, you know, Nico's name was everywhere. And I asked them about that. And Amy pretty firmly said, you know, we want to do what we can to make this a place where Nico wants to stay and grow his career and do what we need to in that, which, you know, as Nico, I believe, has said with you guys, your podcast is, you know, it's not just salary, it's other things around the program. And, you know, we saw that in this deal, that obviously there is big salary increase, but there is other stuff involved as well. So yeah, I think it's probably fair to say that Amy's very heavily involved in this. And this, I think, has been the works for quite a while to try and keep Nico here and make this happen.
Well, you reported the dollars behind it, the 5-year deal with options thereafter, and starting at $1.7 million this year, increasing to $2 million through the possible second option year. This is a bigger commitment than CSU has ever made, especially for basketball. It's I think I heard you say it's the second highest salary in the Mountain West behind Brian Dutcher at San Diego State. And is it ahead of Jay Norvell's deal right now?
So Jay made 1.7 this past season, will be 1.8 in 24. So it's slightly behind, basically on par with Norvell. So yeah, it's like you say, football coach at CSU has always been pretty, you know, far in, you know, above the basketball, men's basketball coach. So this is a big, big commitment, a big step up from where CSU has been.
Well, what else can you tell us about the contract? I did see what you said about the buyouts. They would owe 33%. Tell us a little about that. And then did they give any bumps for assistants? And I think they did give bumps for the operating budget, but was there a salary pool increase for the assistants at all?
Not that I'm aware of. There is, yeah, big increase in the operations budget, which I need to do some confirming on exactly what that means or if that's pretty flexible for Medved to move around as he sees fit, which I think that probably is, which could then therefore be pushed into potentially assistant pool or something like that. But I also wonder if that's, you know, recruiting, travel, you know, whatever, that type of stuff as well. So I'll kind of check and see what that looks like. But yeah, the buyout, it's not a significant increase. You know, basically, I think it's roughly the same percent. It's just obviously the salary is higher now, so it makes the buyout larger. It's one of those, it's not going to deter, you know, if Ohio State, you know, I know they just hired a coach, but just pull a big name out of a hat. If they want to come and get him, they'll be able to pay it. So it doesn't stop that, but it does provide some protection that if he does get hired away in the next few years, it gives CSU a big chunk of cash to, you know, either spin and do buying out someone else for the next coach or put that into your operations for, you know, if you promote from within, whatnot. So it's not a shield that keeps him, you know, from being hired away, but it's a protective net for if that happens. So I think it's one that's, you know, probably all sides are pretty happy on. You know, I know people tend to say, well, the buyout needs to be way higher. Well, if CSU, you know, handed Nico Medved a contract offer with a buyout of $50 million, I'm guessing his agent would say, no, absolutely not. So it's not as easy as just put a crazy number out there and have them sign it because his agent has to work for him too.
And will they keep the same bonus structure and all that that they've had in
Yep, I
place?
think that's all the same. I don't have those in front of me. But yeah, kind of your normal, you know, coach of the year, win a conference title, make the NCAA tournament, win games in the NCAA tournament. Sorry, your standard bonus structure.
This is a major commitment and something very un-CSU like. You know, talking with Amy. Talking with John, to me it seems like this is kind of a signal from CSU that we're not satisfied with just being in the Mountain West right now, and that we're looking to be in whatever this new version of the Pac-8, 10, 12 is going to be. What's your feeling on it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I hadn't thought of it a ton from that angle, but I think that's probably a pretty fair point of it's messaging on a lot of different sides in that way, I would say, of, you know, to the larger, you know, college athletic scene of, hey, we're swinging big. Like we're not just, you know, trying to sit here and exist. And then I think probably with Nico too, and there are probably I would have to imagine there were conversations privately of like, okay, where do we see ourselves, you know, as both CSU basketball and CSU athletics overall, you know, in 5 years. And, you know, obviously John and Amy know more about realignment possibilities than we do, just because they're in a lot of conversations that aren't going to be public, you know, so they can lay out like, hey, here's what we're hearing, here's what we think could happen, and here's why we want you to be part of it and what we think we can do, you know, as CSU. So yeah, I think it would be naive to think that that's not all involved in this. And yeah, big picture, and this is definitely a big swing. It's you're not a plucky little program trying to, you know, swing above your weight, you know, with a commitment like that.
So 2 months on the job. What are you seeing from the John Weber tenure so far? And do you think this is going to be a permanent position?
Yeah, I mean, he's in some ways mirroring Amy as far as being very public and present. He's at a lot of things. Obviously, we see him on social media, doing that. I mean, I've either been at a lot of different events that he's been at or heard from people of, hey, this thing that, you know, whatever, you know, whatever type of event that you wouldn't necessarily think of athletics, John Weber's there. He's definitely very present, very public. You know, keeping and signing Nico, I think, is, you know, by most considered a pretty successful win. So that's a, you know, his first big move as AD or interim AD. And yeah, right now I'd be pretty surprised. You know, I've written this that He's the front runner. I'm not sure if there's a second place right now. I'm sure not hearing much about a search or anything. So I think John Weber is going to be the full-time AD. I know, a lot of people seem to think that as well. And things can change. There could be a surprise, but that's my gut right now.
Moving on to Neek. Obviously we saw that, was it yesterday? He said he was declaring for the draft. This sounds like a similar situation to Isaiah, right? Where yep. he's just going to test the waters and see what kind of feedback he gets. And if he doesn't necessarily like the projections of where he might go or not go at all, then he can come back to CSU. And by all the indications, that kind of would be what he would do, right? Even though he didn't really yep. outline that in his.
Right. Yep. I've kind of. Yeah, made sure double checked on that one. Yeah, it's basically logistically the same as Isaiah last year, David Roddy 2 years before, of enter the draft, go through the evaluation process, door is still open to return. If he were to return to college, everyone's told me that it would be to CSU. The timing we see on that, if guys do think they're gonna transfer as you enter the draft and enter the portal. He obviously didn't do that. So, yeah, I think the door is open. I think, what, it's mid-June? I don't have the date in front of me that he has 16th, to decide, or late June. Yeah, somewhere in there that he would have to, withdraw from the draft. But, yeah, it's a tricky one. It's going to be interesting. He's obviously a versatile athlete that does a lot of things well. But also, I don't mean this demeaningly, but there are a lot of 6'6 good athletes trying to get in the NBA. So you really have to separate yourself to be picked. It is a weak draft class by all accounts, so maybe that will help him. And then there are other factors too, like I count myself in this, of sometimes we assume, oh, a guy has the COVID fifth year, so they'll use that. These guys, when they commit, plan 4 years of college, and there's always the option that they could just say, hey, I did my journey. Neek was in two NCAA tournaments. He was obviously a star last year. He could also, even if he's not going to get drafted, say, hey, it's time to go pursue the pro option, whatever that is. So there's a lot of different things involved, but I think, logistically, it's the easy, obvious move of, you have this chance to go get this evaluation and keep doors open. Why not do it? So it's a big decision, for CSU, obviously. And, for Neek, obviously, he has to do what's best for him, but it's also pretty cool for CSU. I mean, three straight years, guys, in pretty legitimate NBA conversations. That's, we'd have to look through, but that's not a thing that happens a lot at CSU basketball.
Is there any early chatter on his projections, or have you got the pulse of what the coaching staff might be thinking, what his odds are of being drafted or coming?
Yeah, up? I mean, reading big boards and stuff, I haven't seen his name much up there. That might change now that he's officially put his name in. So over the next few days and week, I'll keep an eye on that. But he's not a guy that, was necessarily projected as a draft pick. But again, that can change if you have a good, combine and all that. So I'll be interested. I've heard different, I've heard some people suggesting, oh, he'll probably be back. I've heard others say, no, he's right. He just wants to go pro and he's going to go that route. So I think at this point, honestly, neither would really surprise me. I know I'm sitting on the fence there a little bit in answering you, but I wouldn't be stunned either way.
Well, with Neek at least temporarily gone, you've only got you've got like 11 guys that are gone from last year's roster.
If you saw the Calipari clip when he went to Arkansas, I met with the team. There is no team. That's kind of how Medved and staff, I think, are probably feeling right now.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, you've got three scholarship players remaining at the moment: Jalen Lake, Rashawn Bemba, and Kyan Evans. And you got four players coming in with the recruiting class: center Kyle Jorgensen, Jonathan Mekinen from Minnesota, Jaden Steppe. Is it Steppe or Step?
I'm not sure. I need to check that too. I'm not 100% sure. I just write these and then you guys ask me. I'm like, well, I don't know. I know how to spell it.
And then Darnell Slater from near Riverside. Who of that group do you think, or do the coaches think, has a good chance of being an immediate impact? At this point, it could be all of them.
Yeah, I haven't done a ton of asking around on, deep scouting reports on them. Jaden Step. Steppy from up in Oregon. He had an incredible career. I know they're really excited about him. He's, depending on where you look, some places have him as a four-star recruit. I think ESPN had him as a four-star. He's a guy that, you know, physically looks like he, you know, he could potentially play pretty quick. You know, they call Jorgensen mini Jokic, so nothing like a high bar to chase there. But yeah, without really having super deep intel on them, I'd say Jaden seems like maybe the most likely early candidate. But I could be wrong there, and certainly how they do in summer. Even it's funny, you know, most years I'll ask Nico that, and I'm hoping to talk to him here in the next 24, 48 hours, and I'll ask these questions. But even, you know, coaches tend to say, hey, you know, we have ideas, but you never know for certain until you get them on campus, get them in these practices and see how they react, because, you know, it's for everyone, it's a step up.
During the Mountain West tournament and the NCAA tournament, Tavy Jackson got some run and he looked pretty good. Like his role coming in defensive, good defensive play, lots of turnover on the team. It looked like he was going to be a big role next year. What happened?
You know, it's a good question. His role, like you say, it did shift. You know, there he was kind of Zay's backup at times last year when he was a freshman. I think what he was doing this year, or this past season, like you say, late in the season, come off as almost like a defensive stopper type sub. I thought that was a good fit for him. I don't think he's really a point guard. I think he's more a defensive shooting guard. But yeah, he, you know, minutes, like you say, that there kind of is no team right now. So minutes are available to fight for, but he's also a guy that, missed a lot of time. You know, he had injuries. He was out early this past season as well. And, you know, you're getting to that point. I think a lot of times once you're to sophomore year heading into junior year, it's like, okay, not a young player anymore. You know, so what are you, what's your future? And, I'm intrigued to see where he goes, because obviously a very talented kid, by all accounts, a very, you know, nice, likable kid. Maybe just a fresh start was needed. But it's going to be fascinating to watch him. I wish him well, but, you know, from the CSU side, partly because of the in and out of his availability, you know, I'm not sure I would trust that he was going to be a huge piece moving forward either. So I think, you know, it's both a guy that, yeah, maybe could have helped, but also one that, you know, you can probably find someone that can step into the shoes that he would have been in. So to me, again, that's just a, you know, this is modern college athletics of sometimes if a fit's not perfect, just going to move on and find a new home.
Well, Nico and company have swung and missed on a couple of targets this week, including Kerry Booth from Cherry Creek High School, played as a freshman at Notre Dame this past season, and seemingly had it down to CSU in Illinois. He chose the Illini this week, and then you had Trevor Baskin, which was announced today, or he announced today that he was going to go to CU, transferring from Mesa, and he was a two-time All-RMAC guy, so... tough week for the Rams. What else is on the list of remaining portal targets? I mean, there's probably got to be a lot of guys that
there's a lot. It was tough. You know, Booth was like the big swing. You know, getting him on campus, frankly, surprised me. I was pretty stunned at that because with his resume, you know, he could go almost everywhere. So even getting him on campus surprised me. Going to Illinois, not a shock. I think that's one. You know, you swing big. If you hit it, it's awesome, but you're not counting on it. The Baskin one, you know, is certainly a bummer. You know, you're down to CU and CSU. Obviously, if you're CSU, you want to win those for a variety of reasons. Baskin seems like a kid that, you know, talented player would have helped. You know, they've had a couple guards visit that went elsewhere. Obviously, guard is a position of need. So it's one of those, like, yeah, they've missed, you know, or, you know, been told no, which is always hard. And, you know, people on social media take super calmly and don't overreact at all, which is awesome. But yeah, miss on some guys, but they're also, and last I saw, they're like 1700 players in the portal. So it's not like they're the only good players. I know they have another big round of visits coming within the next week. I don't have any names yet that I can share. I'm working on nailing down who some of those folks are, but I know they are very actively working on that. It's a really fascinating time because you do have so many spots. It's in a way good because you can, it's easy to, suggest that playing time is available, but especially for veteran players, that have their clock winding down, they want to be on good teams too. So you don't have as much of a pitch there. You kind of have to use your prior history as opposed to the current roster and what you're pitching. So that's a little trickier. But they've been pretty successful in finding good fits in areas or names maybe you wouldn't have anticipated. So I benefit of the doubt, I would say, for now. I know people love doing Twitter recruiting. Anytime a name airs a portal, I see a folks saying, this is a Ram. I would just say that they tend to recruit pretty quietly. And, a couple of the, people visiting that I know of, no one had ever mentioned. I know like Joel Scott last year, I didn't find that out until like the day it was happening, I think it was. So some of these can happen pretty quietly. So just because that's my word of caution, I guess, just because you're not seeing, such and such is visiting CSU doesn't necessarily mean nothing's happening. They tend to be pretty good at operating quietly.
So Nico's not just sitting at home on a pile of cash?
No, he's actually sitting there with a tape measure at 6'8", and you have to be able to walk under it for him to recruit you. he only wants the small players.
That's the other complaint.
That's tongue-in-cheek for all the people that send me mean tweets about that.
There's a joke. A lot of people that don't like the smallish stature of his rosters.
Yep. I'd never heard that, actually, Joel.
I hear it all the time. You should spend more time on Ram Nation.
Oh, my gosh. Right?
I fully understand, like, hey, yeah, of course, every basketball coach wants very tall, athletic, talented players. But I do chuckle that for some reason that, like, a 6'8", 6'9", threshold has become, like, a be-all, end-all for whatever reason. It's like, I mean, did you not like Nick Clifford? Did you not like Joel Scott? David Roddy? I mean, those guys were okay. Isaiah Stevens, too small. Don't play him.
Exactly.
Like, yes, I get big, talented players, good plan, but it's not the be-all, end-all.
Like, almost all of San Diego State's team was like 6'9", 6'8".
And when you're looking at 6'11", guys, it's pretty hit and miss on whether or not they are big goofballs or if they actually have some basketball skills.
So. I feel quite confident that there are some 6'11 guys they could have brought in, but they can't move or play offense or defense. They just stand there. So you don't want those either.
No.
Yep. All right. So it's
tough.
Women,
oh, yeah. Here we go.
Switching it up. So we just landed a couple of transfers.
Yep.
UNC Bear and Emma Ronsick, Hannah's sister, an all Big East, two-time all Big East player out of Creighton. Anything you want to share on those two players?
Yeah, I'll start with Simmental. Just coming across the highway. She's from Pueblo too, so pretty, Colorado kid.
The West, the cold.
Yeah, exactly. And 39%, I want to say, career three-point shooter. Good shooter. I think can create off the dribble a little bit. Seems like a nice piece, especially when you add it in with Emma Ronsick, who her resume is outrageous. I truly think this is one of the most accomplished transfers CSU any sport has ever landed. I was trying to think through that, and there's Shade Lawrence, I believe it was, the track team got a few years ago. She had won a national championship in either shot put or discus before she came to CSU. So that's obviously about as high level as you can get. But if you look at the others, I mean, Ronsick's resume is as good as it gets. Like you mentioned, all Big East. She probably would have been Big East Player of the Year if there wasn't someone named Paige Beckers running around in that conference. She couldn't play on just about any team in the country. That's a really, really big time player. I'm super fascinated to see, how she plays in the Mountain West. Not to be demeaned to the Mountain West, but it's not the Big East. Frankly, I don't know all the rosters or all the roster changes in the league right now, But is she your preseason player of the year? I mean, she might be.
I love McKenna. How do you think this changes the team? You know, we were very, I mean, McKenna really did make this team go. But teams really focused on her so much that if there were any kind of hiccups in her game, we didn't have a shot of winning. You get an outside shooter like Simmental. You get a player like Emma. I think we have a lot more. We have more players that can actually score. How do you think next year kind of projects for the women's team?
Yeah, I think the formula probably should be what you're suggesting there. Of if you can have, you know, four players averaging double figures, even if it's a bunch of, you know, 10 and 11 pointers, that's pretty hard to beat when you have that balance, especially, you know, with Emma Ronczyk there. So you have, you know, it's shaping up to be a decent group there. Emma Ronczyk should be a star. Hannah, her sister, which is why she's here, which is, you know, really cool, fun for them. I'm sure that's awesome. She's a solid player. Marta really grew, I think, as the season went on. You want her to take another step. And then, yeah, surround her with shooters, or her meaning Emma, I think, with shooters. And, you know, they have a freshman class that a few of them on paper look really good against freshmen. You never know for certain how they'll step in. But I think, yeah, Emma will be the star. But, you know, some more balanced scores and capable scores and depth around her seems like the formula. And, you know, on paper, I think they have a chance to be pretty decent. I hope that they go out and schedule aggressively. That's always kind of one of my gripes with that program. Of you have, you know, maybe, you know, they had the Mississippi State game this year, but outside that, the non-conference was pretty darn weak. And since the Mountain West is so bad, I think, man, I would just love to schedule really aggressively, find out what you are, what you aren't, learn that, and you'll be more ready to go. You know, unfortunately, those 3 days in March is what they probably need. So I'm really intrigued by this roster, though. I think it's been a hugely successful offseason.
Well, Kev, we've kept you long enough on your birthday. What are you doing any fun tonight?
Not much tonight. Just going to have a quiet dinner at home with my girlfriend, but I'll go out Saturday after the spring game, celebrate both birthday and spring ball being done, and you know, enjoy a nice weekend.
Yeah, what do you do once football's over? You just take a nice little respite?
You know, May, I'll chip in. You know, it's high school sport championship season, so I'll chip in with some of that. Recruiting for football really kicks up in like late May and especially in June, so some of that. And yeah, some vacation time in the summer. But yeah, it definitely slows down, especially after the whirlwind of basketball and NCAA tournament land. That was pretty wild. So a little slower isn't bad.
Well, I encourage our listeners to subscribe to the Colorado, and Kevin is tough to beat when it comes to CSU coverage. I'm a proud subscriber myself. I love to support local journalism and your efforts, Kev. So appreciate all you do.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Always fun catching up.
All right, buddy. Let's have a cocktail here sometime during your down season.
Sounds like a great plan.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Our thanks to Kevin Lytle from the Fort Collins Coloradoan. Hope you all enjoy the spring game Saturday. Of course, it's going to be the typical Colorado spring weather BS. Low 40s expected, possibility of snow. So unfortunate considering that the next day and the entire following week are expected to be in the 60s and 70s, but oh well. Thanks to Cam Strizzo, Michael Rowe, for skipping golf today in the 40-degree sleet to join us this afternoon. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Appreciate it as always. Go Rams. I got my grub on, but didn't pick out. Finally got a call.